The J-Talk Podcast.
Yes, 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 yes.
Sound the trumpets. Hello and welcome to episode 450 of the J-Talk podcast. Ben Maxwell, Sam Robson and Johnny Nickel with you. Gents, looking resplendent in your tuxedos on this auspicious occasion. Sam, two more J1 clubs going under the microscope on this episode. And yeah, it's great to have you along for the ride.
Well, thank you, and congratulations to you on another fantastic milestone. Hopefully, with the J-Top podcast, we'll keep going from strength to strength as we edge up towards 500. But yeah, looking forward to another really good episode to mark the occasion.
Yeah, I tell you what, Sam, you will have passed a milestone of your own quite recently, because I went back and checked, and yeah, you joined as co-host in at the start of 2020, which was episode 302. So yeah, you're nudging 150 in the co-host chair, but you were obviously on a lot of episodes before that. So I wish I could have kept track of it along the way, and I would have sent you a commemorative T-shirt or something. But yeah, huge thanks to you for all you've done or along this journey. And Johnny, one of our favorites now, of course, a part of the furniture around here, and yeah, such a big help on these preview episodes. Great to have you along for the ride as well, mate.
Thanks very much. It's an honor to be here for the 450th episode, and congratulations to you, and also congratulations to Sam for must be nudging 200 by now in terms of appearances. So I don't know if I might get 20, 25, 30. I'm not sure how many I've been on, but like you say, there's a couple of good teams to get stuck into tonight, so I'm looking forward to talking about them. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
Great, thank you, mate. Great, thank you. Yeah, and ready to sink our teeth into these two clubs from Kyushu, Fukuoka and Tosu. And yeah, a first-time guest on the J-Talk podcast is joining us. Daniel Hawkins will chat about Avispa with us. So without any further ado, let's jump into it. And joining us to chat about Avispa Fukuoka from all the way in Perth in Australia is Daniel Hawkins. Daniel, welcome to J-Talk. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Ben. Glad to be here and great to have a chat with Sam and Johnny as well. And congratulations on the 450th episode. I don't know if I've listened from day one, but I've definitely done the vast majority.
Thank you very much, mate. That's very nice of you to say. And, of course, you're not a complete stranger to the J-Talk airwaves, are you? Because you guested on with the Stuart Woodward on the Tricolor Pridecast last year. So, yeah, some of our listeners will have heard your voice before. And a lot of our patrons probably think they know you quite well after you're a very prominent member of our Patreon-only line group. But for the listeners that don't know you, who are you? Where do you come from? And how did you become a Avispa Fukuoka supporter?
Sure. Yeah. And it's great being on the line group. That's one of the things I love about the whole podcast is the patron line group. It's really great to have chats with people from all over the world, really, about Japanese football. So I suppose in terms of my background, as most of you can probably hear, I'm from the UK originally, from Southeast England, from Kent. So that means I'm a Gillingham fan by trade. But it was all good Southern people in England support Manchester United as well. it's typical. to be fair, I didn't know enormous about the J-League previously. I remember one of my first recollections was when Gary Lineker moved to Nagoya in probably the early 90s, I think it was. So I was aware of – I've got a bit of a soft spot for Nagoya because I was aware of them early on. But other than that, it's really through my wife, who I met here in Perth. As you said, Ben, I'm living in Perth, Western Australia. My wife is from Fukuoka, and I decided that, you know, I probably should try and get a bit into Japanese football. It's only 1 hour time delay. So I thought I'll see what I can have a look at. And Avispa had to be my team. If she was from somewhere else, I may have been a Gamba fan or a FC Tokyo fan. I'm not sure.
Fair enough. All right, that's brilliant. And how many times have you been over, and have you checked out the best Enki Stadium?
I have, yeah. I've been to Japan a few times now. Actually, both of my children were born over there. I have seen Avispa, but not when they were in J1. So I have seen them in J2. And that was, I think, gosh, the last time. That was probably back in 2018 before the pandemic ruined things for everybody travelling overseas. I saw them, I think, at home to Yamagata, where they won. But I do have a plan, touch wood, of going back in September this year. So I should be in Fukuoka for probably the first 3 weeks or so of September. So I'll try and catch as much as I can.
All right, that's absolutely outstanding. All right, then, so the pleasantries are out of the way. Let's review Fukuoka's 2022. Daniel, it wasn't quite as rosy, was it? Following on from Avispa's eighth-placed finish in 2021, their first season back in the top flight in 5 years was always going to be a tall order for Avispa, and the second season syndrome bit hard, didn't it? They only spent 3 weeks in the top half of the table in the first half of the season. The highlight was when they went eighth after thumping FC Tokyo 5-1 at home in match day 11, but unfortunately they couldn't play Tokyo every week, and a horror run in the second half of the season when they went winless in eight saw them slide to 17th with 5 games left. With the odds seemingly stacked against them, they then proceeded to take 10 points from those last five and ended 14th, 2 points above 16th placed Kyoto. The joint second fewest goals conceded, but the lowest scorers in the division with just 29. Where would they have been without Yuya Yamagishi's 10 goals? The obvious answer is J2. Jordy Crooks chipped in 4 goals and Lukian got 3, and all of those came against FC Tokyo, and he certainly would like to play Tokyo every week. So how do you remember the season, Daniel? It was obviously very rough at times, but that rebound towards the end when all hope looked lost, I don't know, does that fill you with a little bit of optimism for the season ahead?
Yeah, it does slightly. Not a great deal, but a little bit. I mean, I think after the first season back in J1, finishing eighth was probably, I think most people would say, was a bit of overperforming. I think that was true, and I mean I absolutely, you know, dined out on it for ages, especially in the line group, so that was good. But I think the last season was nowhere near as good, and as you rightly say, the issue is scoring goals. Basically the defense is reasonably solid, but it's just trying to get the ball in the back of the net. There was a few good wins at the end of the season, like you say, which we managed to stay up. I think we got a bit Kashua and Sapporo in the last few games of the season. There was a half decent run in the Levain Cup and the Emperor's Cup, but I mean, really, that's not anywhere near as important as staying in J1. So we did, luckily, and I'm sure we'll get on to predictions for this coming season. But yeah, it wasn't the best season ever.
No, certainly not. And Sam, yeah, Daniel's pointed out there the lack of goals. Yamagishi was absolutely crucial for them, with Lukian just completely failing to live up to any expectations at all.
Yeah, it was a really tough season for him. Obviously, as coming in as J2 top scorer, we expected a lot more from him. But I think what they lacked really, Avispa, was the creativity. I mean, I think Emil Salomonsson's transfer away, I think that was a real blow for them. Because, yeah, that ability to whip in balls from that right-hand side, his set pieces as well. It really, without that, I think they really struggled. So, yes, Lukian struggled as well up front, but maybe the service wasn't quite there. But you've still got those goals, so hopefully he can kick on a little bit in this season. But yeah, Yamagishi was just absolutely fantastic. But I'm still worried about that lack of creativity. The signings made, like Jordy Crewe went as well. I don't know, he didn't play too much last season, or not as much as like he probably should have done, but his ability to deliver from that right-hand side as well will be missing. So what do you make of Kazuya Kono and Masashi Kamikawa, Daniel? Do you think they will bring in the required creativity to feed the strikers?
Yeah, that, to be honest, Sam, is exactly what I was thinking. Having Crewe gone is a really big loss, I think. I don't know an enormous amount about Connor. I think I did ask when he was announced with the Patreon line group what he was like at Tokyo. But I'm hoping there might be, you know, to a certain extent he can replace Crewe. But I'm not completely convinced. We'll probably talk about it more in a minute. But I'm looking more forward to Ryuga Sato coming up front. I'm hoping that Lukian really can turn this season, actually start scoring some goals. You're absolutely right. There has been a lack of creativity, and it's all very well having a solid defence, but if nobody's putting any pressure up front, then the defence is under more and more pressure. We're not scoring goals either. So, yeah, it's very problematic.
Absolutely. Now, Johnny, Harry's mentioned on in a Patreon question, yeah, the loss of Salah Monson. That was, of course, at the end of the season before last. And, yeah, with Jordi Crooks going as well, along with Takaki Shichi. And, well, Wanma's obviously a striker, not so much a creative player. But, yeah, I mean, the transfers out, we've mentioned a couple of them. And I guess it's a little bit similar to Kyoto, who we talked about on our first preview episode. And perhaps it's an indication of the overall quality of their squad. And again, Daniel, you can throw all this back in my face because I know you've got the wood over FC Tokyo in the last two seasons. But yeah, I mean, 10 players have left the club in the off season, according to Michael Master on Twitter's transfer Google Doc. And only two have moved on to J1 clubs. The previously mentioned Crooks to Cerezo Osaka and Takaki Shichi to Hiroshima. So apart from those two names, it doesn't look like they've lost a great deal. But it's also a matter of what they've brought in to replace them.
Yes, it's interesting all the points you guys have made earlier, because in terms of actual forwards, I think they've probably slightly improved, because if you look at Watari, who's had a lot of injury problems, is gone. Juanma Delgado, I know there's a lot of kind of chat about, like, you know, his off the ball antics, but I think he can actually be a very effective player at times with his physicality. But between Delgado, Watari, and the potentially soon to depart John Mary, there was only 5 goals last season. So I think Sato, who I think Daniel mentioned there, coming in and looking and scoring a few more goals, that they're actually, from the forwards, they might be able to get more goals. But I think, as Sam pointed out, we've kind of mentioned the creativity. Salomonson, it's 2 seasons on, still hasn't been replaced. And, you know, I'm interested to know what kind of shape they're going to take, because, you know, Shigetoshi Hasebe, he likes the 4-4-2, but he also used the back three at times last year, which I think with Crooks not being there, I kind of wonder, it just looks much more strong, like it's got the best players in there in the 3-4-2-1 formation. So I'm interested to see. I guess it might depend on the form of Kono, who, you know, as Daniel was delighted that Fukuoka finished ahead of Kyoto Tokyo 2 years ago, and then they beat them last season. But I think, you know, FC Tokyo, if they finish about 8th or 9th, they don't get too many plaudits, whereas Fukuoka, I think, a little bit like Tosu, you can get away with not being quite as consistent game in, game out. That might suit Kono. And I know they've got a young forward, is it Reiju Tsuruno, who's coming in from Fukuoka University. I don't really know anything about him, but it'll be interesting to see how he goes. But, you know, Daniel, it's nice to talk to you for the first time. But my first question for you would be, what formation, what system do you think we'll see Hasebe using this year?
Yeah, I think you're right, Johnny, and nice to talk to you as well. Sorry. I think, as you say, 4-4-2 is generally how they go. But given the ins and the outs, as you mentioned, and I've read your excellent blog post, Johnny, and all the predicted lineups, I think you're probably right there for sort of 3-4-2-1 type thing. I think that's probably going to be the best option myself. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you've still got the kind of some of the core there. You've got obviously Grolli, Nara, and you know, Mia at the back and things. And I think that's a good strong back line. But they need to try and get a little bit more forward on the wings, at least, to try and have some of that creativity. And something you said in your blog as well, Johnny, is about getting crosses in. And I think that would be key, because I think pretty, you know, over the last couple of seasons or so, they've relied a lot on whipping the ball in. Previously, you might have been someone with a free kick or, you know, or crew coming in. But I suspect there'll be a bit of that, trying to maybe get up on the flanks and then whip the ball in. And hopefully, we haven't got Juanma now just to bundle the ball off his chest over the bar or something. So hopefully now we'll have maybe Lukin can do a little bit better, or unfortunately John Mary not. But Yamagishi or somebody else will be on the end of them.
What did you put Lukian's struggles down to, Daniel? Because as Sam said, yeah, he was the J2 Golden Boot winner the previous season. And yeah, unless he was playing FC Tokyo, just couldn't hit a barn door. Was it just completely a lack of confidence? He just looked devoid of it for the most part. But yeah, you would think he would have linked up really well with a player like Crooks, but it just didn't happen for him. So I guess you have to hope that I don't know, he won't have adjusted any better, you wouldn't have think, to his first season. But yeah, maybe just maybe one goes in off his ass in the first week or the second week, and then that sets him on his way. Because I mean, he obviously is a very talented striker.
Yeah, well, that's right. And as soon as I remember when he was signed and he was announced, I think there was a bit of chat on the line group with you know, thank goodness we've signed him rather than, you know, any other guys from J2. I've forgotten the guy's name now from Kyoto Senga.
Utaka.
Utaka, thank you. Thank you, Peter Utaka. Yes, I'm really happy to be at Lukian, but he just didn't do anything at all, really. He just looked, whenever I saw him play, and I obviously don't get to see as much as some of you, but he didn't look happy at all. He didn't look as if he was enjoying it. It was always a bit of a struggle, and I get, as things progress and slowly you're not scoring, your confidence does drop. I mean, it'd be great if that could be remedied at some point this season. Maybe kind of there's a bit of a new invigoration with a few new players coming in. But he is fundamentally a good player. I'm not really too sure why it didn't work out last season particularly. But yeah, I'm just really hopeful it does turn around.
All right, so to the ins, there's two from other J1 clubs. The fullback Itsuki Oda joins from Kashima, but he's been hasn't been a really irregular ever for them. So a bit of a project, I suppose, for Mr. Hasebe to take under his wing and see if he can turn into a player. And yes, the wee man Kazuya Konno has signed from FC Tokyo, for whom he made only 31 league appearances in three seasons, but did get a decent chance in the team last year, making 19 appearances and scored three goals, including a worldie against Fukuoka at Ajinomoto Stadium. So I don't know if Mr. Hasebe was very impressed with Kondo on that particular occasion and thought he might be one to sign down the line. Yeah, as I said, he's never really gotten a proper run in the team at Tokyo. He's another tricky winger that never really gained the trust of his certain Tokyo manager along the lines of Yohei Otake and Hiroki Kawano from Tokyo squads from years gone by. So, he certainly leaves with my best wishes, and I hope the best for him. Would have liked to see more of him, especially last year and the season before that. But, hoping he can flourish. Fukuoka is a perfect place for him to put down roots, I suppose. He's, you would expect he would play most games. Johnny, you've got him first in your depth chart in his position, so you're expecting him to play quite regularly?
Yeah, I would. If it's a 3-4-2-1, I'd imagine he might sort of shift in a little bit to that kind of inside forward position, playing with maybe like Yamagishi and Lukian or Yamagishi and Sato. And if it's a 4-4-2, then he'd be straight down the wing. Again, like you mentioned, like Lukian, it might be a case of just getting off to a good start and keeping going. I think with Kono, it could be like that as well. If he gets up and running, he's getting regular football and he's playing reasonably well, then I think his season might kick on. Because I think I was having a little look at the Fukuoka fixtures earlier today, and between rounds 5 and 8, they play consecutively Shona and Yokohama FC, Kyoto Sanga and Niigata 4 games in a row. So I think they've got a few tough games to start, but then those 4 games are really going to be starting to, they're really going to have hit their straps by that point, because if they can get good results from potentially all of those games, and that sets them up well with only one relegation place on the go this season, if they were to get off to a good start, that just makes the rest of the year so much easier, I think.
All right, and Kondo will obviously hoping to get a few goals for himself, but we'll hope to provide some ammunition for last year's top scorer, Yuya Yamagishi, Sam, who, as we said, was absolutely vital for Fukuoka's survival, and Hasebe will be hoping for more of the same from him this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a very good job for Avispa that he didn't leave in the winter. But, I mean, scored 10 goals out of 29 for Avispa, so more than one in three for them. So, vital that he gets going. And he needs a little bit more support around him, though. And I'm looking at Kono. I think Kono, from what I've seen at Tokyo, a very good player in bursts. He needs that consistency. But likewise, on the other side, Tatsuya Tanaka, who didn't do too much last season, but previously, especially at Oita, I think, he has the potential to be a really promising player. I would say promising, he's 30 now, but you expect to see a bit more out of him. Plus, Lukian's got a higher ceiling than he's shown. So there are pieces in this Avispa front line that, if they all click and they all gel together, then maybe they going to pull away from this predicted. I think everyone, unfortunately, for Visby is predicting them to be fighting out for this one relegation spot. But there are signs in that squad that maybe, there is a bit about them. And I'm interested in Ryogo Sato as well, 23, 13 goals last season in J2 with Tokyo Verde. Is anyone, I've not seen too much of him, but what sort of profile of striker is he? And do you think he could complement Lukian? And that's just an open question to anyone that may have seen him.
I'll go first because I know at Verdi there's been a lot of kind of off the field stuff that's gone on the past two seasons. So he's been kind of in and out the team, starting some off the bench and others. But he's been very consistent with his 13 goals. I think he's very good at pressing the ball. There's a lot of movement. He's very energetic. He's probably not going to do too many 90 minutes, but he's going to give his all for the team. He's going to move around, make space. And he's also from what I've seen, quite a clinical finisher, which is, with, as we've said, that the lack of chances created by Fukuoka is really, I think, is the ideal signing. Because I know Daniel mentioned there, when it was a choice between Lukian and Utaka, you thought Lukian is the much better player. I think Sato is one of the best players they could have got from J2. I know Takahashi at Kumamoto, that would have been another great signing, but he's gone to Reds. I really liked Sato. I was a player I mentioned I thought Gamba should go after. I think he's quite an all-round forward. And alongside Lukian, yeah, because he's Lukian more of the big man, to Sato is more gonna move around. Those two could work together with Yamagishi on the wing. I don't see why that couldn't work. And it might be something they might test out in the Levan Cup before going with it in the league. But yeah, I think they're gonna have to look to go from Sato, Lukian and Yamagishi. They're all gonna have to contribute. So I think, yeah, I'm really high on Ryogo Sato. I think he's a good signing. How about yourself, Daniel? Do you know much about him, or do you know anything from like pre-season training? Have they tried the two like main central forwards together?
Oh yeah. Well, first thing I've done, Bruce, I'd echo what you said there, Johnny, about being really excited about him. And from what I've read, he was wanted by quite a few other clubs. So it's great. He's obviously chosen to Vispa. I haven't seen much of him really. I've done a few, you know, Google searches, trying some clips of him and to see what he's like, what sort of player he is. I mean, obviously the highlights clips are only going to give you the best bits, so it's not a completely fair representation. But he seemed to be pretty good with the ball at his foot. He was doing some pretty good dribbles and he was taking it past some people and things. So going back to what we mentioned before about previously a lack of creativity, I'm kind of quite hopeful if those highlights packages were representative that he might have a little bit of a spark there. But no, I haven't seen a great deal of him, to be honest with you. And I'm going to go on a bit of a bugbear here, that the YouTube international, J-League international YouTube site only show the Tokyo Verde games in Indonesian, and it's not my forte. So unfortunately, I haven't seen a great deal of him, but it is my bit of a bugbear, which I had to get into tonight's call.
No, fair enough. Well, yeah, we hope that, Sato can be productive for Fukuoka and, provide another avenue to goal alongside Yamagishi and, hopefully Lukian and Konno as well. Yeah, Harry also mentioned that he's, he loves the Konno signing. Whenever he seems to watch FC Tokyo, Konno had a blinder. So, for Fukuoka supporters' sakes, Harry, they will be hoping that you'll be tuning into quite a few Avispa games in 2023. All right, so. So, as I think the guys have mentioned, Daniel, the overall tone of the questions from our patrons wasn't hugely positive. Just the one relegation spot this season. So if you're good enough, then 17th will be good enough to stay in J1. Graham Freche wonders, can they stay in J1? They still have lots of room to fill up the foreigner slots with quality players, but we all know the J-League foreign scouting departments, for every good player, they sign two awful ones. So you'll hope that if Fukuoka bring any more players in, they are hits rather than misses. Chris says maybe another team glad that there's only one relegation place this season. It might be harsh, but that was the only question he could ask about them. So, hopefully, these signings do make a difference. And I mean, you have three excellent centre backs in Grolly, Mia, and Nara. So hopefully the manager, gets his best players on the pitch. And if that means just tweaking the formation to do that, then he'll obviously be well aware of the task at hand. But I guess overall, how positive are you that 17th will be good enough?
I think I tend to agree with Chris's question, who said that we're pretty lucky that there's only one relegation spot this season. I mean, saying that, I did my J Preds the other day, and I mean, of course I'm biased. Well, I'm trying to look at which teams potentially are worse than Avispa, say. And realistically, I think we're probably throughout the course of the season, probably better than Yokohama, Kyoto, Shonan. I would imagine we'll be around maybe the 14th, 15th. I would like to think, having one relegation spot is a massive weight off my mind.
All right. Now, you probably don't want to be too rude to our guest, Sam, but I don't think you're overly positive about Fukuoka's season. What sort of an area do you have them in your current table?
Yeah, no, not only being rude to guests, but I have a soft spot for Avispa as well. They're one of my original teams when I started in J2, so I never want to be too harsh on them, but I have them in a group of three, then one of those could go down. I'll reveal all when we do our J Preds eventually, but I've got them in the bottom three. I think, similar to when we were speaking about Kyoto, I don't think Avispa will ever get battered. I think they're strong enough defensively to always be in games, and as I mentioned earlier, there is the potential quality there in attacking areas, that if it all clicks, then yes, maybe 14th, maybe even higher than that is possible, but I don't see too much from them. Maybe another foreign striker when Mary eventually leaves. I know he's been linked with Rizespor, but currently, and I'm sure everyone will echo my thoughts here, that there's a earthquake that's just happened in Turkey. I imagine that's going to take absolute priority for all clubs there, so maybe that transfer gets knocked down the line a little bit. But if that eventually goes through and they do get in another foreign investment in attack, maybe that could be the spark that really brings them clear of these relegation places. But as it stands, I think bottom three for me, and they'll be featuring prominently in my J-Pred. Johnny, where do you see Avispa landing this season?
I'm actually closer to Daniel than I am to you. I kind of go with it. I think that having that solid defence, that's always a massive help in a kind of battle at the bottom. And I think I was joking with John Steele when we did the kind of Christmas special off air about there's only one team that goes down, but being the J-League, there'll still be like six or seven teams in relegation trouble with about 3 weeks to go. So you never really know what's going to happen. But I think that defence, and we didn't mention also that like Maya and Nakamura in front of that defence. I think, if Murakami can get back to his best as well, you've got a very solid base there. What other teams might kind of leak goals. So I think, while agreeing with both of you that if three teams were going down, I think Fukuoka would be a very nervy season all round. I think they've got enough to stay away from that bottom spot. So I don't have them in immediate relegation trouble, but I don't think it's made that comfortable this season, to be honest. How about you, Ben? You have the final word on it.
Yeah, I haven't really narrowed down my my predictions yet, but they're currently in the bottom six. I really have to knuckle down and sort them out properly. But I'm sure you'll beat us twice again this year, Daniel, and maybe those 6 points will be good enough to see you out of danger. But we'll wait and see. And it's poor hosting by me. I should have said along the way that Sam's one to watch for Fukuoka was Yuya Yamagishi, and Johnny's was Ryoga Sato, and both of the gents have spoken at length about their players. So before we let you go, Daniel, is there a player, maybe it's an under-the-radar youngster coming through, or it could be just your favourite player, for somebody who might be checking out Avispa for the first time, or maybe they're just not a regular Avispa watcher, who would be a one to watch for you in 2023?
Well, had you asked me this a few days ago, I would have said John Mary. I've got a bit of a soft spot for John Mary, and I was really pleased when he did come back from being, I think he was in China. But that's obviously all gone pear-shaped, so I can't really refer to that anymore. I think like I've mentioned before, I think Sato is a really good prospect for this season, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him. Otherwise, of course, Yamagishi is fantastic. I can't say Juanma anymore either, unfortunately. And Salomonson's always been a great player in my mind. But if we're still talking about current players, I'd still like Douglas Glolley. he is, I think we just mentioned it a couple of moments ago, but he's a real pillar in defence. And I think especially when, you know, when defending against corners and things, he's always up there. He's always clearing the ball. So he's one of my favourite players for sure. Yeah. But I think we've got, I'm a little bit more positive than everybody else, but I think, you know, we've got quite a few good new players coming in and some other players who can kick on this season.
All right, fantastic stuff. So, Daniel, thank you ever so much for joining us. Yeah, good luck for the season ahead, and we hope to catch up with you and see how Avispa are getting on.
Yeah, pleasure. No, thank you very much. It's been great talking to everybody.
Thanks again to Daniel, and yes, it shapes as a fascinating season for Fukuoka. There's that word again. Yes, the other club from Kyushu in J1 this season are Tosu, and 2022 was yet another season of defying expectations for them. Their remarkable stay in J1 actually matches the length of time this podcast has been around. We began in 2012, the same season they were promoted for the first time after 13 years in J2. Their staying power is absolutely remarkable. An 11th place finish at the end of the day in 2022 hardly jumps off the page, but consider they were a top half team every single week from match day 4 through to match day 32. Obviously nowhere near the potential relegation problems that many tipped them for, and many do season after season. I mean, their resources are so limited compared to so many other bigger clubs, in inverted commas, Sam. But as I say, they keep defying expectations. Kenta Kawai arrived from Ehime FC and was a nomination for manager of the half and full season in the J-Talk Best 11s, as he turned a ragtag group of youngsters into yet another strong Tosu team.
Yeah, he did an incredible job. The amount of players they lost at the end of the season before last was just incredible. They've all gone on to much bigger, bigger teams in terms of profile, higher up the league, and for him to have kept them fighting in and amongst the top half for most of the last season, I think is an absolute credit to them, with what is a bit of a ragtag bunch of players not playing in J2, young players coming through, and he's managed to gel them into a wonderful team. Again, he's going to have to do a little bit more rebuilding this season, but yeah, absolutely deserved his nomination for manager of the year last season, and yeah, to keep that team well clear of relegation all season is an absolute credit to him, and a credit to the team that just keep defying expectations. And I'm not going to even consider them going down this year, because it's just be stupid.
Yeah, I think we've probably all learned our lesson by this point in time, Johnny. As I said, it's a kind of a yearly thing. We expect their bubble to burst, but they don't just make do they? I don't think they've ever really been in serious relegation danger in those 11 years previously. So it's just remarkable. I mean, yeah, the smallest club basically in J1, and they have been ever since they came in. But yeah, they just continue to not only defy expectations but thrive.
Yeah, it's amazing. And for someone who supports a quote unquote bit bigger team who tend to fail a bit more recently than succeed, I look on with envy at Tosu. And if you look at, you know, as Sam said, they're absolutely gutted before last season started. But you have players like Fukuta, Iwasaki, Kikuchi, Diego, Harada, Horigome, to varying degrees, they all performed above pre-season expectations. And I think it's something I go back to. I remember maybe even a couple of years ago talking with John Steele on J-Talk Extra Time, and we're discussing Tokyo Verde and how, I think that this really applies to Tosu as well. Like, at the start of any given season, there's usually one or two players in their squad that no one's really heard of or knows much about, but by the end of the season, everyone knows who they are. And that seems to happen every year at Tosu. And I think it really helps, there's not the big expectations that there are maybe at some of the kind of big city clubs. You know, a lot of those players who left Tosu the year before didn't really go on to perform that well at their new club. Like, I think I remember Noriyoshi Sakai. I remember you saying something about he seems like the kind of player you'd imagine FC Tokyo signing and not being very good. And I was listening at home thinking, yeah, I thought the same thing about Gamba, and eventually Nagoya bit the bullet. But, you know, Tosu 11th place, well above expectations, but very inconsistent. There was like two 5-0 wins, a 4-0 win, a 4-1. But they lost home and away to Kyoto and lost comfortably to Jubilo in Shonan. And I think that 4-4, that incredible 4-4 draw away to Kashima, that really summed it up. Because, you know, Tosu, I mean, I'm sure their fans, they don't like losing or drawing games like that any more than anyone else. But just the kind of atmosphere around them, like from the league, it's like, oh, what a game. Whereas I think if a Nagoya or Urawa or, you know, Vissel were 3-0 up with 40 minutes to go at Kashima and then ended up scraping a 4-4, I don't know if the fans would be too happy. But yeah, I think Kawhi's still there. They've not been gutted to anywhere near as much as usual this winter. So I think there's quite a lot to be upbeat about in Tosu this winter or this season.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. Just quite a off season. Just the lazy 20 outs, according to Michael Masters' spreadsheet. Diego, the defender, has headed to Kashiwa, which you mentioned on last week's episode. In midfield, Kei Koizumi fulfills the quota of one Tosu player to FC Tokyo each off season. A move that raised some eyebrows, no question. Taichi Fukui going to Bayern Munich. That makes Michael's spreadsheet, obviously. And the two of the forwards from last season, Yuki Kakita, unlucky, of course, to miss out on the golden boot, and Taisei Miyashiro returned to parent clubs Kashima and Kawasaki, respectively, after their loans expired. And speaking of them, those two, last two in particular, Johnny, I'll come back to you, actually, with Kakita and Miyashiro. A couple of questions directly about those two from Harry. No Miyashiro or Kakita next season. Could the lack of a prolific goal scorer hurt Tosu? And Chris, where will their goals come from? They literally do not have a number nine. Does that indicate they still have some business left to do, or am I reading too much into it? What can Kawhi get out of obviously the players that they brought in as well? But with the squad that's left, with those two forwards having departed the club.
Yeah, I think I've mentioned before, I've got one of my students is a Sagan Tosu fan, and I told him I was coming on this week to talk about Tosu, and I told him that all of the questions were asking where the goal's coming from, and he gave me a sort of wry laugh and walked away. So I think that kind of tells you what some Tosu fans are thinking. I mean, in terms of, you know, you mentioned 20 departures, I only really wrote down like six as being kind of mate players who would have kind of featured in the match day squad, and even from that, I think Miyashiro is the only attacker. You've got Diego, Koizumi, and Miyashiro were the three main starters, and, you know, Miyashiro got, I think, 11 goals and assists in total in 22 games. That's a tough one to really fill in that gap. I mean, if Tosu fans want me to, I'll write off Keimin Togashi again, because I've written him off before and he's came back to haunt Gamba, and he's had a decent season with Sendai. He might be one of those players, you know, I mentioned that, you know, last season people like Fukuta or Iwasaki, Horigome, that no one expected to do anything, but he might be the one that actually comes in and, you know, what, at the end of the season he's linked up, he's set up other players around him, and he's got like 8 or 9 goals himself. Because other than that, you've only, I think one of the questions mentioned is about no centre forwards. As far as I can see, they've got three in the squad, and one of them is Yuta Fujiharu, who you got injured in a loan spell at Yamagata. And the other one is young Ayumu Yokoyama, who I think Sam knows a bit more than me about. But yeah, but I don't have a solid answer other than Tosu usually find someone from somewhere to overperform. And yeah, Togashi is a good link-up player. And I think he probably came in with Kawhi likes him. He likes that kind of player. Kakita, I've no problems with anyone saying objectively Kakita is a better goal scorer than Togashi, but potentially for the system that Kawhi is planning, I think Togashi might be the better player. But Sam, I know you've got quite a good rap on Yokoyama. So what do you think about him and also the other like goal scoring options at Tosu?
I think you might build that up a little bit more than is necessary, but yeah, I'll give it a go. He's my one to watch because of this question, really. Where are the goals coming from? And Yokoyama, only 19, scored 13 goals last season in J3, which is a very good return for a young player there at Matsumoto. I just think he kind of fits the profile of the way that Kenta Kawhi wants to play. What he wants of his striker, really good movement. And I think just the reputation, I'm basing this a lot on Kawhi's reputation of getting the best out of young players and maybe slightly unheralded players coming from J3. And I just think it really suits the way they're going to play. They're going to play quite dynamic across that front line. The entire squad, really, the way they set up, is very fluid in the way it moves. So I think he works nicely, whether it's with Togashi or just on his own up front, with the wingers switching around as well. So, yeah, it's really interesting is the way I'll put it. There's no guarantee of goals in this squad. Togashi, yeah, got, I think, 11 last year, but at J1 level, I don't think he's ever really shown enough. So I think Yokoyama, especially during pre-season, it seems to be that a lot of the talk about their performances across that, has been like how good Yokoyama has been, how much of a surprise he has been. It's difficult to really get, for pre-season, a lot of clubs hold it very close to them. They don't release too much footage. Games are played 45 times 4 or something like that. So you can't really take a great deal out of it. And it's just a few supporters who've turned up and into Miyazaki or Okinawa or wherever it might be. But yeah, it seems that they've been quite impressed with him. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. Maybe if he starts, maybe he could play off the left wing. But that's really going to be crucial for them, because otherwise the squad looks pretty settled. I think Koizumi, and I'll talk about him on the FC Tokyo episode, but he was magnificent for them last year. But to get in a replacement like Sou Kawahara, who had such a good year for Roasa last year, very vital in that role in front of the defence, I think it's as good a replacement as they could have got. So generally speaking, I think Yamazaki at the back, I think, as well, is another good signing. Diego offered that little bit of fluidity playing either left back or centre back, often both in the same game, but young Nakano should be able to do that job just as well. So I don't think they've got too much weaker Tosu this year, and a lot just depends on whether they can get enough goals from those strikers.
Yeah, all right then. So, yeah, 20 outs. And, I think we've mentioned in passing a couple of the ins already. Yokoyama mentioned, and, yeah, Sam, I think, has teed up Johnny for his one to watch by you mentioning Sou Kawahara. So, I could try and list all these names off, Johnny, but I guess it's trying to decide which of these ins you think could really have an impact. I mean, there's a number of players coming into the first team squad from the under-18s, from various university teams, or indeed from J2 clubs. So, Sam's just spoken about Yokoyama there. So I guess your hopes are high for Sou Kawahara?
Yeah, so I'll start with Kawahara, and then I'll maybe throw a couple of more random ones. But I think anyone who's kind of followed some of my work, like I did a kind of J2 post last year with players likely to come to J1. I managed to get 6 correct, and 3 of them from Roasa Kumamoto. And Kawahara was a no-brainer for, I think, anyone who followed J2. I think you'd say Koki Ogawa, who you'll talk about next week, and Yotaro Ito, who we talked about last week, and Kawahara. They were clearly the 3 best outfield players. And that was Kawahara's first year at that level. You know, he's a great passer from deep. A lot of his defensive stats were great. He's a good crosser. He's the top assists maker in J2. It was interesting to see in the kind of that relegation promotion playoff against Kyoto Sanga. They really targeted Kawahara in the early part of the game. I think Sota Kawasaki was like really on him, and he made a couple of mistakes early on. He wasn't used to being pressured that much, but then he grew into the game as his side grew into the game. So I think, yeah, it might take him a few weeks to get up to speed. But as I mentioned earlier, you do have that kind of space in Tosu to have the odd bad game and get away with it. And I really like this move in that I think we talked before about, you know, players like Ryotaro Ito or Taiki Hirato, who they've been at a really big J1 club and then they've gone to J2 on loan and they've been kind of too good for J2. It seems very difficult for some players to find the right level between massive J1 club and being too good in J2. So I really like how Kawahara, with just 1 year experience in J2 at Kumamoto, I really like how he's taken a step up to Tosu, where he's not jumped in and gone to like Kawasaki or one of the big Kanto teams or something, and there's pressure on from day one. So I think he's someone there's expectation about, but I think he's someone we're going to be talking about quite consistently throughout the year. A couple of more wild cards. I mean, first of all, saying I think Yamazaki's a good defender, as Sam mentioned, but there's Dai Hirase, came in from Waseda University. I think he got rather thrown to the wolves last year. He played one game as a designated special player against Kawasaki, and I think he got a red card and got a bit of a pasting. But I think getting that one game sort of suggests last year that Kawai quite likes him, so you might see him sooner rather than later. And then the real wild card, I think, is Anthony Akumu, who I believe previously played for the Kaizer Chiefs in South Africa and is a Kenyan international. So, I mean, I know there's a couple of players. Ismail Dunga was one that they brought in on the back of Olunga doing so well, and he didn't do so well there. But Akumu can play, I think, holding midfielder or centre-back. So I'm really interested to see what he does if given the opportunity. But, yeah, I mean, Sam, what do you think about Akumu? And is there any other names you'd throw out from that kind of lengthy list of arrivals?
Yeah, well, Akuma is just the latest in a long line of clubs trying to replicate Michael Olunga. There's got to be another good Kenyan out there, and he's the latest. Holding midfield is where he's been in pre-season. It looks like he's going to be the understudy to Kawahara. Decent experience, 30 years of age. But, yeah, I'm not massively sold on him. I've spoken to the guy who worked on the Kenyan national team, and he kind of says he's probably at about a similar level to Ismail Dunga, which is a slight issue, given the last he was seen in Japan was struggling at Kamatamari Sanuki. So, yeah, obviously it depends whether he just didn't settle. I know was it during COVID that Dunga came over, so maybe that affected him as well. So maybe with Kumu getting a good pre-season, yeah, he might be able to step and be a fairly useful option. But yeah, I'm not seeing him as like standing out and going to be the next great Kenyan to really join the J-League. So yeah, I'm not massively sold on him. But the other one, another new signing that I'm really excited about is Kabayama, who was coming from Yokohama F. Marinos after being on loan at Montedio Yamagata. I remember when he was first thrown into the wolves. He played from the start for Yokohama in that, I think it was the 2021 season, was it, against Kawasaki, where they got blown away in the first half, and he was hauled at half time. But yeah, there wasn't anything against him. He's got so much promise from that left wing position, still 20. I think he had a reasonable time of it at Montedio Yamagata, and yeah, I think he's in the perfect place for him to be able to grow this season at Sagan Tosu. I think they usually do really well with these youngsters, and hopefully, Nishikawa's a similar one, and we expect to see a bit more of him, so maybe him at either side and Kabayama, maybe this is the time for both of them to really grow this season. But yeah, I think he's got all the potential and only 20 years of age, so hopefully, yeah, this is a real breakout season for him.
I was a little surprised he actually went permanently, because he's only had like 2 years at Marinos. So I wondered that there's no backstory to that, is there? I hadn't heard anything. But
no, it might be one for the Tricolor Pride boys to consider, because yeah, it's a real strange one to me. The same really with Yamada, who I thought should have gone back to Marinos, but again, he's been let go. So yeah, I'm not 100% sure what's going on at F Marinos, letting these youngsters away from them. But yeah, it would seem ideal just to send him on loan to Sagan Tosu for a year or two to really develop. But yeah, congrats to Sagan Tosu on capturing him permanently.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, once again, they'll be very much a team to watch as well. I don't think they'll be defying as many expectations this year, will they, guys? I think they're probably most people have been turned into believers, especially after the dire predictions for last year. They were well and truly exceeded. I don't know, maybe they'll come back to bite us on the bottom, but it looks like this squad is good enough to at least be mid-table again. And the guys have given their ones to watch, and listeners, you knew that I was going to give Fuchi Honda a mention. Let's just hope he can stay fit for an entire season, because with any luck, he'll be the Tosu player joining FC Tokyo for 2024, but we shall wait and see. All right, Johnny, I'll come back to you. Where are Tosu currently in what area of the table do you have them in as you begin to whittle down your J-Pred?
I think solidly mid-table. I think they could potentially slip a place or two from last year's 11th, and they probably won't spend as much time in the top half of the year at the top half of the table as they did last year. But yeah, no danger of threatening the top of the table, and no danger really of threatening that bottom place. How about you, Sam?
Yeah, pretty similar. I've got them 11th in my current rough draft, but that could change by one or two places, but that's where I see them. But there's one caveat I'll have is if Park Il-kyu disappears. I know that over the weekend, Yohei Takeoka has been heavily linked with a move to Vancouver, and last time Marinos lost a player to the MLS just before the season started, they raided Tosu for Eduardo. And if they do the same with Park, who looks like that sort of profile of goalkeeper seems perfect for if Marinos. So if they do that and they lose Park right at the start of the season, there's not a lot waiting behind him. So that I would then be quite concerned about Tosu. But as it stands, yeah, 11th would be where I have them. Ben, what about you?
Yeah, they're in the lower reaches of my middle six. So, they could be 11th, 12th, or if there's news about Park, then, yeah, they might slip a couple of spaces further down by the time I actually get it nailed to the mast. But, at the moment, I'm expecting mid-table again. And, this little old club, they just keep pushing away. And, if they do indeed stay up, then the next season will be their 13th in the top flight. That will match how long they were in J2 before they got promoted. So, all right, then, that is it for episode 450 of the J-Talk podcast. Thanks to, far too many to name, but all the guests along the way, from Sean Carroll all the way down to Daniel Hawkins making his big pod debut on this episode. Thanks to everybody who's contributed along the way. Sam riding shotgun for the last three and a bit years. And, Johnny, absolutely brilliant to have made the connection with you and to tap into your wealth of knowledge. It's been a boon for the podcast, no question about that. We'll have episode 451. For you very soon, listeners, and that will include previews of Nagoya and Hiroshima, so look forward to that. Hopefully that'll be a Wednesday release this week. And before we leave episode 450, thanks to Harry, Graham Freche, and Chris for their questions via Patreon, and to all of our patrons for their ongoing support. All right, Sam, we're just going to pick up where we left off and record these other two clubs. The listeners don't know that, but I'll speak to you in a minute.
Yeah, speak to you in a minute. I'll just get that tuxedo off and get into something a bit more comfortable for episode 451.
Indeed, yes. You can stretch out and relax as well, Johnny. You get that bow tie off. It's very fitting on you, but maybe you should make yourself a bit more comfortable as well.
Yeah, it's getting late at night, so I best make myself comfortable for two heavy hitters we've got coming in the next 451.
Yes, indeed. All right, then. So, we've already said our goodbyes, haven't we? So, stay tuned for episode 451 coming very soon. We'll speak to you then. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes.